Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truths Podcast. I am your Jose, the fantasy football fiend, and I have my guy, BK Wins. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, y'all.
Yo, so we have an action-packed show for you today. Tons of content. You're definitely going to enjoy it. Make sure you check us out on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, that's on YouTube at The Gospel STP. And if you have not yet joined the Facebook group, join us there as well on Facebook at The Gospel Sports Truths Facebook group. With that being said, let's go right ahead and jump right in, BK. Start us out with the good word of the week. What we got?
Well, I feel like many years ago we talked about this, Abe, but, you know, history repeats itself. So ex-NFL running back LaShawn Johnson was charged in a federal dogfighting case. He's actually been charged with having over 190 pit bull type dogs used in, animal fighting ventures, which of course violates the Federal Animal Welfare Act. He faces 21 counts and, if convicted, faces a max penalty of 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine on each count. What do you think about this? What's your reaction? Does it feel like deja vu? Where are we at?
He's an idiot. That's where I am. I mean, we have seen this movie before. We know how it ends. Like, my question is, when people do stuff like this, what's your end game? Like, it's never going to go unnoticed, but for so long, or it's not going to not get to the right person that it needs to get to for it to be shut down, you know, for but so long. Moreover, and more importantly, the harm that you're doing to animals that don't have the ability to defend themselves, it's just... it's bad all the way around. With that being said, have fun in prison and enjoy yourself. You're going to have a nice little time out to think about what you've done. And then hopefully you can come back to society and be a productive member. And the rest of your life is a fairy tale of how things can go wrong and then you correct them versus things going wrong and then going even worse. So, not the end of his story, but the stupid part of it.
Yeah, you know, we say this all the time, you can't fix stupid. First of all, there should be zero tolerance for animal abuse and cruelty. There's no place for it. There's no excuse. And so I'm confident he will be held accountable for these actions. We've seen this movie play out with Michael Vick, a much bigger star than LaShawn Johnson. And there was a price to pay for Mike Vick as well. So, you know, he'll have his time behind bars, I'm sure. And like you said, lots of time to think about it. And what he also said is really true, too, because I heard from someone where we both work above us who always says, you know, this can be a very small part or a footnote in your story, or you can, in your very long story, you can allow it to be your whole story. For his sake and his family's, I hope it's just going to be a footnote in a regular long story versus this is the story for him. But, you know, just these kind of things just make me upset because there's just no place for it.
Very poor decision making. Do better.
This is what we got up nice things.
All of his nice things are going to be gone because that $250,000 per occurrence, the money you thought you had, my guy, bye bye, buddy.
Hopefully he's been investing in BK Wynn so he can make some pay for some of these fines. Nevertheless, into happier news, it's something will definitely make you smile, or I feel will. Stephon Diggs, now a Patriot, 3 years, $69 million. Your boy Drake May got some weapons now, or a weapon. How do you feel about this?
Drake May has a lot of weapons. But you know what? I say we don't stop here. I say we hammer the position home so that way there is no way possible for it to fail. I say we go ahead and draft Hunter if he's available at 4. His worst case scenario, His worst case scenario is he's a horrible wide receiver and he's a decent cornerback. That's his worst case scenario, which means for my money, he's the one guy in the draft that can't fail. He literally can't fail. There aren't very many other guys in the draft that I'll say that about, but if he isn't very good at one thing, he'll be above average at the other, is what I'm seeing from the tape that I've seen of the young man. But with that being said, if you have Diggs, you have the wide receiver twos and threes that are already there, which the group of wide receivers that were already in New England were a good group. We were just missing the alpha dog. So even if we don't go the route of wide receiver early in the draft, maybe we go left tackle. I can see that, you know, being a position of need more so than wide receiver now that Diggs is there. But if you really want to drive home the position and do it in such a way that you really can't miss, I would say we still address that in the draft maybe a couple of more times. Maybe you go out and you get a Keenan Allen or whoever the next best wide receiver is that's still out there in free agency, just to ensure that Drake May has a plethora of weapons to throw to. The beautiful thing about this deal, 3 years, $69 million. However, there is a team option after year one. So if things don't work out the way they should, we have an out that's going to give us zero penalty against the cap. So beautiful. That's the other reason why I say we go big at wide receiver. So that way a guy can be already in the house, if you will, that's been trained to be the next number one, which is why I would still possibly swing big at a Hunter type, if you will, at 4. But yeah, this is an offseason to be proud of for New England. We aren't just saying that we have a lot of money. We're actually spending it. And we actually hired a coach that can get other players in the league to actually take the money. Go figure. So all things are coming together. BK, I'm going to tell you this. This is going to be a short turnaround for the Patriots. This isn't fanhood talking. If you look at the players that we have on defense and you look at the coach that we have, being a defensive coach, the defense is going to be not good, great. Okay? If you look at what we have going on offense, the style in which we're going to be able to play with McDaniels being the OC is not going to be a let's put up 100 points a game style of offense. It's a let's complement the defense that is hardly letting any other team score at all. All we got to do is put up an average of 21 points a game, and I believe that we can have a very quick turnaround and be a wild card playoff team this year and possibly back to leading the division as soon as next year. That's how good of an off season I feel New England is having. And Stephon Diggs isn't the cake. He's the icing on top of it. And we're glad to have him. I think he'll be hungry. He doesn't have too many more stops in his career, so hopefully he'll be on his best behavior, especially seeing as how it's essentially a one-year deal, unless we're happy and you're happy, and then we can say, hey, okay, we'll allow you to stay. If we don't want you as wide receiver needy as we are, you might be at the end of your rope at the end of this year, depending on what happens with other teams. But yeah, it's all roses today.
Yeah, it's a great move for New England. Anytime you have a franchise quarterback, especially a young one, in this case, Drake May, it makes a lot of sense to surround yourself with as many weapons as possible on offense and also have an offensive line to protect him, right? We see this in Cincinnati all the time where Burrow has all the weapons, but his line can't block to save his knees or legs at all. He keeps getting hurt, you know, so keeping May upright is priority number one. But number two, it's surrounding him with weapons. Diggs goes a long way in doing that amongst the other moves you made. So definitely they're trending up. I'm not quite ready to put them ahead of the Bills yet, but they're definitely doing a lot of things. And to be honest, it will be very easy for them even this year to jump a Jets and Dolphins team that are very flawed.
I agree.
So, but moving along in more sad news, women's basketball lost a superstar for the rest of the year, where Southern Cal star Juju Watkins' season ended after tearing her right ACL. I guess a two-part question for you, Zay, is our resident women's college basketball expert here. What does this mean for her collegiate future, and how does this change Southern Cal's title chances for this year?
As far as her future is concerned, I don't think it puts anything in jeopardy. I believe she's still on pace to do exactly what she has set out to do, which is be one of the most dominating players in the game and be one of the best players on this level that the game has seen. I don't think that this injury hampers that at all. It may make it a little less likely that she clears Caitlin Clark's record at the end of her 4 years, because if I'm her coach, especially next year, which will be her junior year, especially to start out the year, I'm going to use her as gingerly as I possibly can, because when I need you the most, it's going to be at the end of the year, but also just as importantly, I don't want risk of re-injury to my player, whether it's the first person up or the last person on the bench. I don't want to be a coach that says, well, I don't care about your future or your health, I just want to win. So she's not going to get the minutes that we're accustomed to seeing from her. That can possibly hamper that one specific goal, or that maybe I shouldn't even use the term goal, because it may not even be anything that's, you know, on her to-do list, if you will, but she was on pace for that. I am also of the mindset that when you have an injury of this nature, a lot of times the difference between being cleared to play and being mentally prepared to play, those might not necessarily sync up together. And I don't know if she will immediately be mentally prepared to play, even though the doctors have said, hey, we don't see anything else that needs to be rectified before she is in no physical situation that's going to put her in peril. So she's a tough kid. And one thing about people with her mentality is sometimes giving them a challenge is the worst thing that you can do for the rest of the competition. But prayers up for Juju, and, you know, we're hoping that all things work out well for her.
Yeah, so obviously...
Oh, the second part of that question, I apologize. Yeah, I don't see them getting past... They may get past Kansas State, but I don't see them getting much further. If they do get past Kansas State, it'll be one of those let's win one for the Gipper type of moments. As you have stated over and over and over again, there's no games that are more emotional than the college games. And that team is going to be ready to run through a wall for her. I wouldn't even be surprised if we saw her on the sideline. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, well, first, let's talk about the most important part, which you did perfectly, which is her injury, right? Because it's really about her, not necessarily about the team and all that. Obviously, really tough blow. Ending your season without seeing it through. As an athlete, there's always that doubt of what if or what could have been. You know, all you want is a chance to show what you can do. And as you and I talked about over the last month, they were one of 6-7 teams that had a genuine chance to win the title. To be blunt, with her injured and out for the year, those chances are done. The experts are 50-50 on them beating Kansas State. I don't think that that's probably fair. I think that's disingenuous to the Lady Trojans. I think they are going to beat Kansas State for two reasons. Even without Watkins, they're the more talented team. And secondly, they're going to be emotionally jacked up for this one. They're going to find a way to win that one. The bad news is, you know who they got next? Yeah, they got UConn. So, and I had UConn beating them with Watkins. They're certainly not going to beat UConn without Watkins. So, but we'll talk about the Lady Huskies a little bit later on. But I'll just say that it's a shame to see, like I said, I'll repeat what I said. It's a shame to see someone's career and season end abruptly, especially knowing how she's a star for the game. It's bad. It's bad for women's basketball. It's bad for the tournament. It's most importantly, it's bad for her, because it's a shame. It takes away something that's totally the most important thing to any athlete, right? When in a team sports, you want to win the title, and they had a chance to do it. And so, you know, that's a shame, but
that's okay. Hey, listen, Lady Brown will be back.
She will be
I
back.
I should trademark that. Yeah, I think I really should. Juju is definitely Lady Brown. I'm telling you, she'll be back. Don't worry about it. The Queen shall return.
And last but not least, there's a theme here, back to more injuries. So, if not the GOAT, for sure in the top two, Tiger Woods underwent surgery to repair his ruptured left Achilles on March 11th, so a couple weeks ago. My question to you, two parts, will Tiger win another title? And then will he ever win another major?
He won't win another game unless it's on Sunday kicking back with the boys drinking some beers. He's done. He was done before this injury. Like, Tiger Woods at this point is a mythological creature that used to exist. And we every now and then see the spirit of said creature grace our Tiger Woods is the living legend version of the Loch Ness Monster or the Sasquatch. We'll never see anything like that again. That's what makes him real yet mythical. Like what he had going was unimaginable. So I just don't. The competition or the field, if you will, has gotten a lot better. He doesn't evoke fear on Sunday the way he used to do back in the day. And we haven't really seen him get through a game as of late without there being some type of nick, scratch, or pain before said game was over. So let him play until he's 90 if he wants to. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But as far as actually winning something, I think we've crossed that bridge. He's more so of a ambassador to the game. And as long as he's willing to pick up a club, you dare not tell him that he's not allowed to, type of a situation.
So it's funny because I've learned throughout the years it's a dangerous proposition to ever bet against Tiger. But I'm going to lay a little own BK betting odds here on this. If I were to set the BK odds at number of titles he'll win from this day moving forward, and I set the over-under at a half, I would confidently take the under. And the reason why is not because talent-wise he can't do it, because when he plays, even now, in his fractured, injured state that he has to deal with, his ball striking is still elite. There's a lot of things that he can do that are elite. The problem is, in order to win the tournament, he's got to be able to make it four rounds, and he can't do that. And part of it is, all the injuries, the car accident, all the injuries to his knee, Achilles, back, all those things, and the fact that he's about to be 50, part of it, because the PGA Tour is geared towards the younger players. But the other thing about it is, it's the start times and the structure that hurt him, especially in the majors. If you get a PM start time on Thursday, you play the AM on Friday. So there's a very short turnaround. In a lot of these places they play, whether it be Augusta in rain or the British Open in rain or wherever they play and there's rain and play gets suspended, then he's got to play extra amount of holes above 18 the next day. So you're having a short turnaround, having to play 23, 24, 27 holes on a surgically repaired body at almost 50. And that's not a knock on him. This is a father time deal. And, you know, at the end of the day, I would never question his toughness. I'll never question his mental toughness. And I'm certainly not going to question his dominance. But I will question father time, because in the history of sports, father time is undefeated. You'll never see him win another title again. And it's a shame, because without him, it's a ratings disaster for the game of golf. Because the truth is, no one cares.
I do not disagree with you, kind sir. And, well, that kind of is a perfect segue to our truth and nothing but the truth. That's all we tell around here, good people. You might not agree. You might not like what's been said. But, hey, we're going to tell you the truth. First up, what we got?
NBA MVP. We each have a ballot, say. So there's about 10-ish games left in the regular season. And I was curious, because I hear a lot of chatter about this. Who you got for MVP? SGA? Or does Jokic do it again?
Well, for me, it's easy. And I really don't think it's... For ratings' sake, you want it to be a competition. But SGA is easily the MVP this year. Most valuable player on a couple of different levels. Highest stats doesn't necessarily equate to most valuable player. Most of their stats are comparable, other than rebounding, which Jokic kind of dwarfs them in that stat. But points per game, assists per game, steals per game, blocks per game, all of that good stuff. Field goals, they're pretty close. So at the end of the day, 60 and 12 versus 46 and 28. Is a pretty clear picture of who the league MVP should be. So if the numbers were dwarfing SGA to the point where it was like, well, I don't care if Denver lost or not, this guy was otherworldly, different conversation. But when they're putting up essentially the same stat lines for all intents and purposes, and one team is heads and tails above in the same conference, SGA. I can't overlook all of that.
So it's interesting, because I agree with you. My vote would be the same. It would go to SGA for the reasons that you mentioned. But the one thing I will say, just to play devil's advocate for a moment, for a brief moment, if we're really looking at who the MVP of the league is, given what he does across the board, to me, the answer is still Jokic. But it's a season award. And based on this season, and I might be a half a game off, so please forgive me out there, everybody. But OKC's 13 games better than the Nuggets. And at the end of the day, he's the best player by far on the best team in the conference, and the team that has the best record in the NBA. So you're having a superstar season on the best team in the league and the best team in your conference. If that's, to me, not an MVP season, then I'm not really sure what would be. And so
you need to start putting out some type of a bulletin that said, these are the things that we consider if that isn't an MVP season. Because at that point, it becomes like the GOAT conversation. Depending on your criteria, you may be 100% right. Like, what's the criteria? Like, if we can't start there, then I don't think most of these conversations have one answer or a right or wrong answer. But this year, if it's not SGA, wrong answer.
Yeah, I got some serious questions if it's not him. That's for sure. But don't worry, unlike some governors, I'm not going to file a lawsuit about it. But I will have some questions. Just throwing it out there. All right, next on the truth. Today was opening day. Mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like Major League Baseball really bothered to care to market that this was opening day, but it is. And
you know why, BK?
Why?
Because every baseball fan knows it's opening day. And if you aren't a baseball fan, you don't care. So keep your marketing dollars. Do you think if the NFL didn't market the first game of the year that it would lessen the amount of viewership? Because I don't think it would.
No. But in fairness, pro football is way more popular than MLB.
Yeah. So the people that love MLB, they're going to – they knew since pitchers and catchers when opening day was, if you actually are a baseball fan. If you're not a baseball fan, you don't care about the advertising. You weren't planning on watching these games today.
I'll have you know I did my part and I watched our team today.
Yeah. Good old 4-2 victory. Way to start out the season. I'm digging it. Hey, BK, fun fact. The Yankees are undefeated without Juan Soto.
Mm.
Also a fun fact. The Mets have never won a game with Juan Soto. I just thought I'd put that out there. Do with that information what you will, but facts are facts.
Well, you know what's funny is, so Soto's now on the Mets, and our buddy Clay Holmes is now on the Mets, and he went from being former all-star closer to setup man to now starter for the Mets. Let me know how that works out. I can tell you how it worked out, 0-1. So, I know it's only one game, people. I understand. 162. Don't at me. I got it. Right? I got it. All right. But speaking of MLB, we are going to do what we've done each of the last years or every year, right? Because we're now 2 for 2. We're going to do our division winners. So, I'll give you the honors, sir. We'll start with, I think, the easiest division. We'll turn it around. We'll start with the NL West. Who you got?
NL West. So, NL West, I do believe is the easiest. And I don't believe there's going to be much of a debate here. We're going to give it to the billionaires. Or the Dodgers, as they like to call themselves. Yeah, that just... going to be more of the same there. I don't even see anyone competing within that division, to be honest with you. So yeah, Dodgers, NL West.
Yeah, I apologize if I'm 1 year off on this. I don't know if the Dodgers have won 10 of the last 11 division titles or 11 of 12.
I want to say it's 10 or 11. I want to say 10.
But I know that the one they didn't win, they won 107 games and it took the Giants to win 108 to beat them. So, you know, pretty easy to predict with the super team. The Dodgers are loaded. They're going to win the division. Moving to the NL Central. Who you got in the Central?
I don't believe we're going to line up on this one. And there may be a lot of people that disagree with this one, and that's fine. But I'm going to give you my logic. So, NL Central. I actually think the Cubs may claim their first full season in their Central crown since 2017. Don't need a big season from their acquisition, Kyle Tucker. But the Cubs have also overhauled their relief corps. So they traded for Ryan Presley, who's kind of the headliner, but also Eli Morgan, Caleb Thibar, and Ryan Brazier. So, I mean, they have a stable bullpen, and I just kind of feel like if they take a step, the next step from where they were last go-round will be, you know, taking the crown for the first time in a minute. So I'm not going to go chalk here. I'm going to go Cubs.
It's interesting because the reason why I started out with the Dodgers is, truth be told, it's the one division where I'm very confident what the outcome is.
Agreed.
In the other five, I think there's two or three teams in each division you can make a case. To your point, I think it's a two-team race. I think it's the Cubs or the Brewers. I made the mistake of counting out the Brewers last year. I'm going to not do that this year, so I'm going to have the Brewers again. But I do see what you're saying with the Cubs. It's a trendy pick. I know a lot of experts also pick them, and for good reason. They're poised to make a run. it'll be, I think either one is a fair option. Last but not least, wrapping up the National League, the NL East. So we got the Phils, the Braves, the Mets. Obviously, the Nats and Marlins aren't going to do anything. So of those three teams, who you got?
Braves. And for me, for the Braves, it's simple. They got plenty of talent. They just got to stay healthy. So time will tell when you play 5,000 games whether or not everybody will be able to stay healthy. But, you know, if they can do that, the division is theirs to have. Let me give you a few honorable mentions. We'll label this as wild cards, if you will. I have the Phillies, D-backs, and Mets as my wild card teams in the NL. So,
yeah, I'm good with that. I like the Braves to win the division. I do think the Phillies and the Diamondbacks will also be wild card. I do think the Mets find their way there as well. I'm obviously excluding the Cubs in that little playoff thing there by taking the Brewers. I think the NL East is going to be very tough because it's weird because the Mets, I think, have gotten a lot better, but I still think they're a third place team. Which is not necessarily a knock on them. It's more of the appreciation and respect for where the Braves and Phillies are. I just think they're a little bit ahead of them. And besides, I mean, no disrespect to the Mets, but the Mets find a way to screw it up usually. And so until I see otherwise, I'm going to go with what I know and see, and they'll find a way. So that would be that. Turning to the American League, Zay. We'll follow the same path. We'll start in the AL West. You got who you got? The Rangers, Mariners, Astros, the Angels, or the A's?
I honestly believe that the Rangers are in a similar situation to the Braves. They have all the talent. They just got to stay healthy. And again, in an endurance contest, if injury is one of your major concerns, it tends to rear its ugly head at some point. You just got to hope that it's not at the point that matters the most, or it at least isn't long-term, because, you know, injuries are going to happen, but you just hope it's not too many players at the same time and for long parts of the season. But AL West, I'm comfortable saying Rangers barring injury.
Yeah, so I think it's a three-team race. The Angels and the A's are going to be really not very good. It was a toss-up for me between the Rangers and the Astros. I know the Astros have lost a lot. You know, Bregman, Verlander, Presley, you mentioned. You know, they've made some moves and lost some pieces and parts. I just think their depth of their pitching is so good. And with Alvarez, they'll be able to, and even Altuve, they'll be able to piece together enough offense to win games. I'm going to take the Astros, but honestly, I don't feel good about it. You know,
You're going to take the cheaters? You, BK?
Going to take the cheaters, yes.
They're begrudgingly, just, I'm assuming.
Yes. I mean, I literally almost threw up in my mouth saying that, but I got through without turning off the camera, and I said so. But yeah, I don't like it. I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, our job is to tell the truth and not to say how, you know. I'd rather be accurate than lie. How about that?
I agree. I was just surprised that you were able to not just skip the topic versus letting that particular team's name come out of your mouth as far as men are.
Just wait till we get to the AL East and you get my answer.
Hey, look, BK, I'm going to tell you what I didn't do on opening day. I didn't jinx the Yankees or the Guardians. I could tell you that. That's what I didn't do on opening day. So we'll get to the fan picks now this is just fandom talking and me not jinxing my team. We'll get to that later on in the season. But for today, I'm not jinxing either one of my squads.
Speaking of the squads, who you got in the Central?
Central. Now, this one, This one, I'm less definitive on this one. I'll put it that way. But the Tigers, they clinched their first playoff berth since 2015, upsetting the Astros, your guys. Now, my thing is,
never so happy to watch Houston go home. Go ahead.
So they got as far as losing in the take-all game 5 against our squad, the Guardians. And if they are to take a step forward, then the only step forward that they can take that's going to make sense is not having to be in a game 5 because they won it before said game. And I just see them in a progression, not being stagnant or not reverting back. Again, barring injury, and I know I got to say that with every pick, but the Tigers is where I'm going to go with the Central.
So it's weird. Anybody but the White Sox, I could conceivably see winning this division. I think the two favorites are the Guardians and the Tigers. I'm going to take the Guardians. I like the Guardians. While obviously the Tigers have the defending reigning Cy Young winner in Skubal, I just trust the Guardians' pitching. Their bullpen is so good. Their starting rotation depth. I think they'll be able to piece together enough offense like they did last year to be able to win the division. I just don't trust the Tigers to hit enough. And then also, do they have enough pitching complementary outside of Skubal? Because that was the problem last year. When he didn't pitch, they weren't as tough. And the other thing, the question I have with the Tigers too is, what team are they? Are they the team that played the first half of the year that were uninspiring, or the last half of the year where they played great? Like, what are they? Or are they in the middle of that? And I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. And I certainly think Tiger manager AJ Hinch would love to know. But, you know, I think it's going to be a dogfight. No pun intended there. But I'm going to give a little advantage to the Guardians there, a little home cooking. Last but not least, the AL East.
AL East. So it is slightly begrudgingly that I'm going to say that the Red Sox are primed to kind of turn things around. They definitely made two of the, I would say, most high-profile moves of the offseason, attacking pitching with the left-handed starter there, also attacking third base with some of the more expensive pieces of the puzzle that have been moved around this offseason. But I kind of feel like they're in a good position to take the division. But again, honorable mentions, I do have the Orioles, Yankees, and Astros as wild cards. So if you see a little bit of a trend, I'm not picking any of my teams. To win anything, I just look forward to watching it happen. I'll put it that way.
So I can't believe that on a recorded thing, I'm going to first pick the Astros to win a division, which I also did last year. But also, I'm going to pick the Red Sox to win the division.
Okay.
So I may lose my fan card after this, but here's why. So I think the AL East is down to three teams. The Orioles, Yankees, and Red Sox are by far the favorites. The Rays are not very good. The Jays are even worse. They should just trade Vlad at this point because he would be stupid to resign there. They keep trying and he's not doing it. And at the end of the day, like, why would you want to play for a garbage team? Sorry, I'm just saying. So if you're the Pinstripers, New York, be the Dodgers East and go and get him. We need another bat, especially with, and here's why I didn't pick New York. I like the Yankees bullpen the most. From a starting rotation depth standpoint prior to the year, I like the Yankees. But here's the problem. Here's why I didn't pick them to win. 2023 Cy Young winner, Gerrit Cole out for the season. You lose your ace, that's a big loss. Then Luis Gil out for the first 2 or 3 months of the season. That's another loss. Clark Schmidt also was supposed to pitch in the rotation. He's also out for a bit. So now you're having all these injuries, not to mention Giancarlo Stanton's already ahead of the injury curve. He's already out before the season even started for a while because his elbows. So it's like you know, you're missing Cole, you're missing Stanton. Like, can this team hold up? When healthy, they're the best team, but they're already not healthy. And I can't imagine it's going to get any better. So I'm just really concerned. I agree with you. They'll be a playoff team and get in the wild card. But the Red Sox made a lot of moves, and I can't believe I'm going to say something nice, but here it is. Joey Cora, despite his little past with Houston, he can coach. And he's the right manager for the Red Sox. I was impressed with what he did last year, given the fact that team was ravaged with injuries. I really like them to win the division, and God, do I. I will not like the postseason if I have to watch the Red Sox and Astros win divisions. I'm just going to say that.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to our March Madness part of the show. We have some predictions to make, sir.
Yeah.
We got a couple of games that are on right now, a couple of games that will be on tomorrow and throughout the weekend, both on the men's and women's side. So let's start out with our picks for the men's side. BK, what you got?
So I know a couple of these games are going on. You know, I sent this, you saw my picks before this happened, right? Because I put in parentheses each of my picks. So BYU and Alabama.
Yeah, I know you said that Florida was going to lose by like 15 or something like that.
That's not what I said. Lies. You're obligated to tell the truth on this show. But BYU, Bama, I have Bama. Maryland, Florida, I have the Gators. The reason why in both those matchups, I said before, the Gators were one of the three teams before the tournament that I thought could win it all. Their offense is overwhelming. They're almost unstoppable on offense. Bama, it's a bad matchup for BYU. What does BYU struggle with? Defending the three. What does Bama do? They shoot the lights out from three. BYU also doesn't really play terrific defense. Bama can score. I like Bama and Florida to advance there. In the nightcaps tonight, Zona versus Duke. I told you Duke was one of the three teams I thought could win it all. I like, even though Arizona did see Duke early in the year, which I think will help, I like Duke to win. And Arkansas could be without their leading scorer tonight. I like Texas Tech to beat Arkansas. I'll let you do those four before we go to tomorrow night's games. But those are my four, Bama, Florida, Duke, and Texas Tech. How do you see them?
We're lockstep. Other than I think Arkansas can take out Texas Tech. That's the one lone difference. I got Bama, Florida, Duke, and Arkansas.
Yeah, and to be honest, I actually would have had Arkansas, but if their leading scorer is not playing, I just really think that's going to impact them. But, you know, look, Coach Cal can coach, so nothing would surprise me for sure. I think that for me was the hardest of the four games, if that means anything.
Agreed.
I think the other three for me were very straightforward. Tomorrow night's game, or Friday night's, I should say, is because you'll catch this, guys, in the morning tomorrow. Ole Miss versus Michigan State. In Izzo, we trust in March. I like the Sparties. Although, Chris Beard's done a hell of a job at Ole Miss this year. Very impressive run to the Sweet 16. I just trust Izzo to get it done. Give me the Spartans. In an SEC battle, Kentucky and Tennessee. Kentucky's played really well this tournament. But I like Tennessee. I think Rick Barnes finds a way to get it done. Lanier is really good for them. I think he'll be the difference maker. Give me the Vols. Michigan, Auburn. You got to stick with the SEC. Michigan's a tough matchup for Auburn because of their seven-footers. But I like Auburn. They'll find a way to advance. Their three-point shooting will be the difference. Brim's the best player, and he's on Auburn. Give me them. And then Purdue and Houston, I think Houston's going to wear them out. The Cougars are really tough. Samson does a great job. I think Purdue's been really good to get to the Sweet 16. I'm going to give Matt Painter and the boys credit. This is just a bad matchup. I like Houston.
Michigan State, Kentucky, Auburn, Houston. So, yeah, I this year, the blessing and the curse of the men's tournament is there really aren't any Cinderellas. Everything is kind of going the way most people who paid attention kind of figured it would go to a certain extent. But yeah, we're pretty much lockstep there as far as tomorrow's games too.
And if it helps us out, Zach, I'll share the breaking news. So the two earlier games tonight went final. Alabama 113-88 winner over BYU. So Roll Tide did roll by 25 over BYU. They'll be to the Elite Eight. And the Gators 87-71 over Maryland. They win by 16. They're also to the Elite Eight as well. So we're off to a good start, 2-0. Hopefully we'll see if Duke, and I know we have two differences of the eight with Kentucky, Tennessee, and Arkansas and Texas Tech. So we'll see how those go. But so far we're off to a good start. Starting off, to wrap up the truth, what do you got for the women's?
So we had Duke, North Carolina, which no matter who's playing, that's always a fun rivalry. But I do have North Carolina there. We have South Carolina versus Maryland. I don't believe this will be a very difficult game for South Carolina at all. And it's not because Maryland isn't really good. It's because the strengths that Maryland has, it's the same strengths that Carolina have. But Carolina is also much deeper. So the fact that both teams are very athletic, but one team can play like 12 different people at full speed for four quarters, and the other team can pretty much only play their starting five, that's not going to be a recipe for victory for Maryland. So I do have Carolina winning there. NC State, LSU. I'm interested to know your pick here. And this may be a pick that's not popular, but is right. NC State, LSU is the much more popular team. But NC State is playing some ball, and they can actually defend what LSU does the best. I just don't think that LSU tends to play for all four quarters. They either have a great first half, and then they kind of, you know, throttle it down in the second, or they let a team stay way too close to them for a quarter or two, and then they figure out, hey, let's not keep playing around here. Let's, you know, hard charge it for the rest of the game. Taking off at all against NC State is going to be a recipe for disaster. Then as far as – are those all the games for the – I think
– I know there's – so there's TCU and Notre Dame.
TCU and Notre Dame, give me – so Notre Dame, like Notre Dame is – I love watching them play basketball because they're just an exciting brand of basketball to watch. They're run and gun, like athleticism, but skilled athleticism. You watch them and it's like, it's okay for Notre Dame fans. Your current point guard reminds me a whole lot of Skylar Diggins, who's your former point guard. Like, the pizzazz and ease in which she plays the game, I know that they're happy as can be that she's over her injury. And then Hildago, she's a stud. Like the two of them on the court together on the same team is going to be a bit much for most to handle, which is why I have Notre Dame over TCU. So before I get to the others, I'll go ahead and let you give those.
Sure. So TCU, Notre Dame has a chip on their shoulder. They 3 weeks ago, they were a number one in the country. And because they kind of struggled down the stretch, they dropped all the way to a three seed. I'll be honest, they got screwed. There's no way they should be a three seed. Either you were ranked wrong the entire year, or you were ranked wrong for the tournament. So, but there's no way that there are 8 better teams than Notre Dame. That's ridiculous. So I like Notre Dame. They'll beat TCU. I like South Carolina to beat Maryland. My numbers have them winning by somewhere between 15 and 17. I think Carolina, not because Maryland's not really good. They are. They're well coached. Brenda Freeze does a great job with the Lady Terps. But there's nothing that Maryland does that's going to threaten what South Carolina does, to your point. And everything that Maryland does, Carolina just does better. I like Carolina to wear them out. They'll pull away and win. And then the other match, the hardest one of the eight I had is actually Duke versus North Carolina. I would love for the Lady Tar Heels to win this. I know Duke's the higher rated team. The truth is, I don't know, but that's not a pass. So I'm going to pick Duke, but I don't feel good about that. Either one is a toss-up. It was the hardest one I had. And the other one, NC State and LSU, give me the Lady Tigers. You give me Malky and March. They're the better coach team. They're the more talented team. NC State's really good. Please know that, and everything you said about how they play with their food is valid. But the thing is, think about, I just go back to Florida State, right? They pretty much played a nonchalant first half where they were up 1 point at the half and literally went video game mode on them and shut them down in the third quarter.
And but if they depend on that against NC State, good night.
I just think that they're so much better than most of the teams they play, NC State included, that the talent level is and the coaching is so much better for LSU that they play with a much bigger margin of error. NC State can't afford to have lulls, because if they do, they'll get beat. LSU can have the lulls and still survive those. You're right about the fact that if you keep doing that and you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. You can only get away with that so long before it catches up to you. And NC State's not Florida State. NC State, if you play that bad, they'll beat you. I just think they're going to play a more inspired game this round because they know they're going to have to.
Not mad at that.
And then the other remaining games we got, UCLA, Ole Miss, who you got?
UCLA, Ole Miss, give me UCLA.
Agreed. Tennessee, who you got?
Texas.
Agreed. UConn and Oklahoma, who you got?
UConn.
In Southern Cal and K-State, who do you have?
USC.
Agreed. Yeah, I have all four of them. I agree with those for sure. I think those were easier to handicap than some of the others for sure.
Agreed. It is time for our top five all time of something. And this week, the top five foods I don't like. I like the switch up you did here, BK, because now instead of finishing up the podcast and devouring the refrigerator, maybe it'll be a case of finishing the podcast and being so repulsed that I don't want to look at food for the next day or so. I'm sure the missus will be happy about the latter more so than when we've done the snacks episodes. And I'm getting out of the chair to get me a bowl of ice cream immediately. Go ahead and start us out. What you got up first? Number five for you.
Number five, anchovies. Oh, that's all I can
say. I don't know that I've ever had them before. I don't think I've ever had anchovies. It's just so many people hate them that anytime I've ever had the opportunity to try one, I'm like, nah, my palate is so childish that it's not even funny. So
listen, buddy, we learned in the 80s, just say no.
Someone
says anchovies, the answer is
no, absolutely not. If that many people hate it, it can't be good. The answer is no. Five for me. I cheated again, BK. I couldn't just pick one. So five, most vegetables. I don't like them. The texture, the taste, the like, green beans, corn is a starch, not a vegetable, but we'll still say it's a vegetable for the sake of this conversation. Green beans, corn, and some not spinach like that you put in water, like salad spinach. I don't like that mushy stuff, which is why I don't like most vegetables. Nothing mushy. I don't want any of the mushy stuff. Nope, so most vegetables is my number five.
I'm surprised you didn't list every single vegetable as an honorable mention.
I still have another vegetable on the list that I just hate above all else.
Touché. Number four for me, and for the record out there, I've not had this, nor will I ever have it, but there's a reason why it's on the list and I won't have it. Number four, eggplant. Zero chance that I eat eggplant.
It didn't make the list, but yeah, that's definitely an honorable mention. The only way I was ever even able to stomach eggplant is eggplant parmesan, because it doesn't taste like straight up eggplant. So the first bite is like, this is nasty, but then it's like, that's why it's nasty, because it's eggplant. Get this out of my face. Like, but yeah, honorable mention eggplant. Number four for me, I don't care what y'all say. Lamb is horrible. Lamb is the most bowel tasting meat I've ever tasted in all of my life. I went to, quick story, the night I proposed to my wife, we went to this Brazilian steakhouse, and lamb was on the little rotisserie. I decided I'm going to try out lamb. I literally spit it out in the plate and verbally and physically gagged. That's how bad lamb was. So for me, absolutely no lamb. Horrible. What you got next, BK?
I mean, listen, we've all had moments where there were things that we just made us want to gag. So, and I apologize for all of you that my camera decided to take a timeout. I think my camera wanted to gag after your lamb experience. It was so bad for you. But let's see if we can rein it in here. So number three, for me, the taste, the smell, there is nothing good about this. Tuna is number three on my list.
That's one of my favorite things, BK.
Well, no one's perfect.
Tuna is awesome. Tuna sat on a nice little sun-kissed sourdough bun. Yeah, good stuff, man. Number three for me, I don't care what you put on it, how you cook it, who your mother or grandmother is that makes it absolutely better than anyone else, I don't care. Do not put liver in front of me. I don't want it. It smells bad. What it does for the animal that it came out of makes me not want it. I don't know if you're familiar with what the liver does, but yeah, I don't want it. Yeah, I know. No liver.
Well, for purposes out there, for all of you good people, that was my number one for everything that you said. Absolutely no. Now, for my number two, I am going to get a lot of hate mail for this. And you know what? Don't care. My number two is sushi. Why? Because I live by a very important food rule as I eat as a five-year-old. If it lives in the sea, it doesn't go in me.
Oh, wow.
Even spoken like a five-year-old, Dr. Seuss would be proud. Here's the thing. I've had it multiple times, granted years ago, and both times it totally destroyed my stomach and upset it, and I'm not going to do that again. So just know.
You didn't get the sushi from the gas station, did you?
No, I'm not a monster, but no. Oh, all right, I'm done now.
Lordy. All right, number two for me. Actually, I'm debating if I want to change my number two because of something that just repulsed me even more, but they're pretty equal, so I'm going to put both of them as a number two. Licorice and candy corn. These are the devil's candies, my friends. There is absolutely nothing that any human being should want with these two candies. They're horrible. I feel like it was a practical joke gone wrong. And somebody somewhere was like, I don't see anything wrong with it. So they kept making it. And it's like the one out of every 50 people will enjoy this. So let's spend our lives making it. Like, just horrible choices in life. If candy corn and licorice, especially black licorice, were to vanish from the earth would be a better place. It's how I feel about those two things. So yeah, number two, black licorice and candy corn, because candy corn is horrible enough that it deserves to be more than an honorable mention. And number one, because we already know that BK's number one is liver, broccoli is so absolutely horrible that it deserves its own spot on the list.
Mm.
It's terrible. Don't add salt and pepper and butter and cheese and try to pee in the wind and tell me it's raining. It's still horrible. I don't want it. I don't want it on anything. I don't want it in anything. I don't want it by itself. Broccoli is what should be served to prisoners. Like that should be a thing. It should be a part of your punishment.
So like you with Sean Johnson.
Broccoli and lamb. That's all you need.
Sean Johnson's meal.
Look, it's just bad. Like there's nothing. And I know some of you are listening to me and like, what's wrong with him? Broccoli is excellent. I don't know what's so wrong with your taste buds that you can't taste that broccoli tastes horrible. Like it's bad, bro. Like it's bad. Like if you tried to force feed broccoli down my throat, it would come back up immediately. Like, I couldn't stomach it if I had to. Like it's just that bad. It's bad. It's real bad, BK, real bad. That wraps up the 2 5-year-olds whining about not wanting the vegetables.
I feel like we just did the child. We did the kindergarten version of "Get Off My Lawn" is related to food.
Pretty much. It is now time, BK, to win us some money. BK's best bets. What we got?
So before I do this, I'm going to ask of this round of games. Did we venture into any wagers for this round's games?
Say again?
Did you venture any money, put any money on this round's games prior to the BK Best Bets?
I didn't. In normal BK fashion, you're 100% spot on and perfect when I forget to bet. So that's pretty much what happened this go round. And yeah, so go ahead. Take your victory lap.
I am not going to do that. I will tell you in terms of the betting, and please note this doesn't count towards my record, nor do I get credit for this because this aired during it. But I had 4 plays. I did personally bet Bama today in Florida. I was very confident of those. Again, I don't get any credit for those for purposes of the show. But just good matchups for those teams, bad matchups for their opponents. 2 best bets for tomorrow's games that you'll be able to listen to the show beforehand. I do like Michigan State -3 over Ole Miss. I think they're going to find a way to get it done. Izzo in March. Look, Chris Beard's done a hell of a job at Ole Miss. I give him a lot of credit. He's a great coach. I know he got kind of had to leave Texas for things that went on there or whatnot. But the man can coach basketball. But Izzo's one of the best in coaches, period, let alone when it comes to March. This Spartans team is dangerous. I like Michigan State -3. And I know I'm going to get some hate mail from Big Blue Nation, but I'm going to take the Volunteers to beat Kentucky. I just think they're the better team. They're the deeper team. And quite frankly, I trust them more, which is hard to say about a Rick Barnes postseason team, which I normally don't trust. But this team, Lanier is really good. I mentioned him earlier. I just think that Tennessee finds a way to get it done. So give me Tennessee and Michigan State as tomorrow's best bets.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And it is now time for the Can't Miss Weekly Rants as we wrap up the show. BK, you want me to go first? Or you want to go first this week?
You can go first.
All right. So for me, it's short and sweet this week. If you are an adult, and when I say adult, I mean,
that means I got to stop listening.
No, that means if you're 18 years of age or older, not if you're a mature adult. If you're legal and you choose to wager your money and you lose, please don't start adding these athletes and in the threatening college kids over your parlays. Get a life. It's not their, it's not the kids' fault that you placed a bad bet. The first thing you didn't do is listen to BK. So that was the first thing you did wrong. And then you go after these kids that were just playing a game and had no knowledge that you decided to place your rent money on whether or not they'd hit three threes or whether or not the team would win by two. That's your fault. That you don't spend more money than you have to wager. Assume you're going to lose whatever you bet. So if you do lose it, you aren't going off the deep end. And this is in all seriousness. If you have an issue, there are outlets for you to get help for it, but threatening children over games, or even threatening grown folks over games because you decided to wager more than you should have, that's a you problem, not a them problem. So budget better, bet less, do something, but figure it out. Something other than getting on other people's nerves because of your poor decision making. That pretty much wraps it up for me, BK. What you got for the people?
No, agreed. Well said. No, agreed. Yeah. So, you know, I always, in my quest, I always try to have us do better, be better. And so I did a little bit of checking in some Instagram reels this week, and there were a couple of news and sports personalities, female news and sports personalities, who posted reels about hate mail and body shaming letters and messages that they're getting. And I think it's really, really impressive. Please note the sarcasm, that you can be a keyboard hero and warrior and trash talk people behind a keyboard, things you would never dare to say to someone's face. You never know what someone's going through. You don't know what their past is or what their current situation is. Please find better use of your time than criticizing people for whatever. I don't care if you don't like what they say. I don't care that you don't like how they look. Quite frankly, it's mind over matter. They don't mind, and quite frankly, you don't matter. Please stop. Like, this is, social media has a many, many and plethora of great benefits. The ability to get information, to have more knowledge, to be able to connect and communicate and get things at a lot quicker speed are all blessings. But the negative thing is everyone thinks, well, everyone's entitled to have their opinion. Not everyone wants to hear it or cares. Keep it to yourself. Because if it was, the situation was reversed and people were saying negative things about you or your family or how you look, that's never okay. That's a losing play. Do better. As you always say, Zay, do better, be better. And that's the truth.
And that about wraps it up for this week. We will be back to you on Wednesday with a little bit more of the truth about fantasy. And we'll be back to you on next Friday to give you more of the gospel sports truth for this evening. We're out. And remember, good people, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. And by the way, the next time you see me, I'll be a year older. How about that?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to BK. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, buddy. And you know what my birthday wish is?
What's that? Pickleball champion?
That you finally come on my side on the Jordan debate.
And that ruined everything. We'll see you next week.
Later, y'all. I'm the problem. It's me.